Kosher, Christianity, the deadliest poison, and Zen, the antidote to all poison. Talks given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 4.
Our beloved Master, once, when Yakuzan was reciting a sutra, a monk asked him, "You don't usually allow us to recite sutras. Why do you yourself recite a sutra?" "I just want to entertain my eyes," replied Yakuzan. The monk asked, "Can I also recite sutras like you?" "If you want to recite sutras like me," answered Yakuzan, "you must pierce even through the hide of a cow." On another occasion, Yakuzan was asked by Governor Ree, "What are the precepts, meditation, and wisdom?" Yakuzan answered, "This poor monk hasn't such useless furniture." Ree said, "Don't be so mysterious." Yakuzan said, "If you want to have what I have, you must sit on the highest mountain, go down to the bottom of the deepest sea. You don't throw off your burdens even when you go to bed. You are busy with illusion."
Thing. The Christian monks who have visited the ashram have sent me their idea of what religion has done for humanity, for civilization, for culture, and I have to discuss point by point that no religion, including Christianity, has done anything to humanity except the heart. I would like to begin from the very beginning, because Christianity believes obedience is a fundamental virtue and disobedience is the original sin. God created the world, and in every church you will hear that He created Adam and Eve after He has created everything else. That's a lie. He has created first Adam and Lilith. But it is not being told to people. There are reasons not to tell it. God created Adam and Lilith by the same mud. It is a myth, but it carries tremendous meaning. And this shows the utter stupidity of God, that He created a small single bed, only one bed, the main chauvinist idea that Adam will sleep on the bed and Lilith will sleep on the floor. The woman cannot be equal to man. From that very point, the whole Christianity has been against equality. Even if God is against, then equality, equal opportunity for all, cannot be accepted. That's why Christianity is against communism, against anarchism. And I say the God was utterly stupid, because when you create a couple, you should at least create a double bed. The first night was the beginning of a struggle that continues even today. Lilith wanted to sleep on the bed, and Adam wanted to sleep on the bed, and two, the bed could not contain. So Adam threw Lilith down, Lilith jumped over Adam, and she threw Adam down. Just because of an stupid God who cannot think that a double bed is needed. The whole night continued the fight, for equality that continues even today. In every bedroom, even though now there are double beds available, the fight continues, the pillow fight. Next day, Adam asked God not the right question. Said, why don't you give us a bigger bed? It had been so simple, logic. He asked God that I cannot tolerate this woman who wants to be equal to me. And God killed Lilith, his own daughter. Neither Adam was asking for a bigger bed, nor God suggested him that there is no problem. I have created the whole world, I can create a double bed. Just like that, a double bed. But God was also a male chauvinist. He favored Adam, although he was unjust to Lilith. And the injustice goes even to the point of murder. Murdering his own daughter because she was asking for equality. To me, asking for equal opportunity is a fundamental religious principle. I don't say people are equal, I say people need equal opportunity to grow into their unequal uniqueness. But a double bed, that proves absolutely that God was a Jew. And it is not an accident that he has chosen Jews as his own people. Rather than making a double bed, he had chosen to kill his own daughter. But it is not killing of only Lilith, he is killing the very idea of equality. And these Christian monks say religion has done great service to humanity. And the Christians have followed, and all other religions have followed. China does not believe that a woman has a soul. It is just like furniture. If a husband kills his wife for thousands of years in China, the husband is not committing a crime. The wife was his possession. And you can destroy our chair, you can destroy anything that you possess, it is not a crime. And because the woman has no soul, nobody is murdered. Thailand believes there is no soul in the woman. And Christianity down the ages has been killing millions of women, burning alive, for the simple reason because they were far more ancient than Christianity itself. They were called witches, and Christianity turned the word into an ugly thing. The witch means a wise woman, not a woman who is having intercourse with the devil. That is Christian invention. They could not tolerate wise women, because wise women means then what the priest and the bishop and the cardinal and the pope. A woman can be wise? Never. Only men can be wise. And because those women were certainly wiser than men, it was a long heritage. The only way to destroy them was to find an excuse. Anybody could report. Pope has created a special court, a grand jury. Anybody, X, Y, Z, could simply inform to the court anonymously that I suspect a certain woman in my neighborhood is a witch. That was enough. The woman will be caught, tortured for days on, beaten, sexually abused, till she accepted that yes, she is having intercourse with the devil. Naturally, you cannot suffer infinitely. There comes a point your spine is broken. And what is the point? These people will go on beating you, will go on torturing you, will go on not giving you food, not giving you water. So what is the point? It is better to accept what they want. Death was better than to be in the presence of the Pope. They choose death knowingly that once you accept in the court that you are having a love affair with the devil, it is a very summary trial. The woman confesses, the judge immediately orders that this woman should be burnt alive in the marketplace So everybody can see, and everybody can find out if there are other witches in the village, in the town, in the city. Just the idea that a woman can be wise was unacceptable to men. And the root goes to God Himself. God killed Lilith, and this time He did not make Eve from the same earth as He has made Adam. Because that same earth has created the idea of equality. So this time He put Adam in coma, and took out the first surgery in existence, a rib bone, and out of the rib bone He created Eve. She will never claim to be equal to man, she is just a rib bone. She will serve man, surrender to man, obey to man, worship man, and every church goes on saying that God created Adam and Eve. Their own scriptures say something else, but that is not being told. Centuries of repetition that God created Adam and Eve in the beginning has made the lie to appear at least as if it is a truth. And a God who has created the whole world could not create a woman without taking a rib of Adam. It is very strange. But the idea is that the woman is nothing but a bone, nothing but a body. And she is secondary to man, and she has to be an slave to man. And this idea in different ways is found in all the religions. The woman cannot go to heaven from the body of woman. First, she has to be virtuous, chaste, dedicated to the husband absolutely. She may be born as a man in the next life. Out of this virtuousness of being a slave, if slavery is virtue, obedience is virtue. The husband may be a drunkard, the husband may be a murderer, the husband may be a rapist, the husband may be doing all kinds of crimes, but the woman has to accept the husband as her God. This you call civilization? One of the monks has said that Christianity created civilization. Absolute nonsense and absurdity. According to Christianity itself, God created the world 6,000 years before. In India, we have excavated Mohenjo-daro, a big, huge city just like Bombay. And Harappa, again another big city, which even Christians, because the man in charge of excavation was a Christian, Marshall. Even he has to accept that we cannot reduce them more than 7,000 years. That will be absolute nonsense. It does not fit with my conscience. Although as a Christian I should put them below 6,000 years. But as a scientist, I can bring them at the most 7,000 years. And those cities, I have to tell you, have as big a road as New York or San Francisco. That shows that those cities must have great vehicles with speed. Otherwise, those roads are not needed. Just for people to walk on them or bullock cars, those big roads are not needed. Even today, our biggest cities don't have that big road. And on both the sides, pavements for people to walk. It is an indication that they must have been having some kind of vehicles run by engines, some kind of petroleum, gas. Not only that they have big roads, they have huge buildings. Only ruins are there, but the ruins show great stories. Such huge bedrooms. They had public swimming pools. They had a water system, a very strange water system, to connect every house with pipelines. Every house has a bathroom, a toilet, and do you think Christianity has civilized the world? Just 100 years before, in American Supreme Court, there was a case against a man who has just now come from Europe and has found that in Paris, people are having bathrooms attached to their bedroom. So he has made first bathroom attached to bedroom. The whole Christianity was against him. Great processions, that this is absolutely dirty to have a bathroom attached to the bedroom. Bathroom, toilet had to be far away back of the house. And the man has to fight up to Supreme Court to win the case. Just 100 years. And 7,000 years before in Harappa and Mohenjo-daro, they had attached bathroom, toilet to their bedroom. They had a water system. Making water available to every house, every bathroom. Making water available to public swimming pools. And there were private swimming pools also in very big houses, which were certainly of rich people, kings and queens. And 7,000 years is the minimum. The more possibilities, they are more NC 15, then 7,000. Because there is no mention in Hindu scriptures about Harappa and Mohenjo-daro. Such huge city and no mention of those cities and Rig Veda, the most ancient book, is a valid evidence, 90,000 years old. Even Rig Veda does not mention those cities. Perhaps those cities are more ancient than Rig Veda. Perhaps they disappeared in a catastrophe, natural or man-made, before Aryans came to India. Those cities did not belong to Aryans, because not a single statue of Hindu gods has been found there. Yes, one statue has been found, which proves that Jainism must have been prevalent in those cities. One statue only has been found of a naked Mahavira. But nobody can say whether it is Mahavira or 24 other Tirthankaras of the Jainas, anyone. That statue proves that before Aryans came to India, there was flourishing a great civilization, and that also proves that Jainism is far ancient than Hinduism. Because no Hindu temple has been found, no Hindu statue of Shiva or Vishnu or Brahma, nothing of it. And you will not believe, these two cities went into 7 times in destruction. It is not just a guesswork what happened to these cities. Because first, when they excavated, they thought, this is all a great city. But Marshall was interested to dig more, because he was suspecting that such a big city cannot come into existence from nowhere. There must have been other big cities, so he started digging outside Harappa and Mohenjo-daro, and he was surprised. There was another layer of huge mud, perhaps volcanic explosions, and under that mud, another similar kind of city with the same facilities. And then he became interested to dig more. 7 layers had been found, it seems, for thousands of years. Harappa and Mohenjo-daro were going into convulsions. Destroyed, they made it again. Destroyed, they made it again. 7 times. It must have taken thousands of years for those cities, and ultimately they were destroyed. It is just for us to guess whether it was nuclear weapons those people were accumulating, because all their cities so scientific technology, or it was nature. But nature cannot be so hard that 7 times it will destroy a city. Most probably it was man himself. Perhaps Harappa and Mohenjo-daro were in fight and they were destroying each other and building again whoever has survived another city on top of the old city which has been bombed and destroyed. Now Christians have to answer, were Harappa and Mohenjo-daro created before God created the world? Rigveda was written 90,000 years before and God created the world only 6,000 years before. The Christian eyes are very blunt. They cannot look into existence because of their scriptures. The scriptures prevent them to see the reality. Now it is absolutely certain that Rigveda is 90,000 years old. Because in Rigveda, a certain constellation of a star is described in absolute detail. And that constellation has never happened again. It happened according to astronomers, scientists, 90,000 years before. So the people who wrote Rigveda, they must have watched it. Their description is such exact detail that it cannot be that they were imagining it. There is no possibility. And that constellation has never happened again. Perhaps in future sometime it may happen again. That is a scientific proof of Rigveda's ancientness. Those monks have written to me that we cultured the world. While Rigveda was written, where you have been and where was your God? When Harappa and Mohenjo-daro were destroyed and built again and again 7 times, where was your God and where were Christians? While Upanishads were written, Europe was barbarous. You will be surprised to know arithmetic was born in India. Gunpowder, machine guns were created by the Chinese before the birth of Christ. Alphabet was born in India. Astronomy was born in India. But why these people stopped? They could have moved towards nuclear energy. The reason why China did not move, knowing absolute secrets, but did not create machine guns, although in their scripture absolute details are given, They were starved by their sages that these things will lead to more destructive weapons. One thing leads to another. You just stop, keep the record, but don't produce such dangerous weapons. Why arithmetic did not reach to the point of Albert Einstein in India? It was stopped. For the simple reason that our genius should not be wasted into objective things. Our genius and our life is too small. It is enough to create comfortable life outside and then go inward. The ultimate journey is inward. The same was true in China. These are the most ancient civilized countries. And the original sin, according to Christians, is committed by Adam and Eve. According to me, the original sin is committed by the Christian God. When he created from the rib bone of Adam and Eve, he told both that in the Garden of Eden, the Garden of Paradise, God's garden, it was huge. There were millions of trees. God pointed to two trees that you should not eat from these two trees. One tree was of knowledge, another tree was of life eternal. What kind of father is this who prevents his own children from being wise, intelligent, and prevents them from being eternal, going beyond the circle of life and death? What kind of God is this? Even the Christian God is not civilized. He does not deserve to be called a father. No father will deprive his children. Every father, the poorest father, is trying his children to become educated, to become more intelligent, to become more wise. And every father is trying to pray for their children to have longer life. God, as far as Christianity is concerned, is absolutely barbarous. And devil was right, not God. When devil persuaded Eve and told her the reason why God has prohibited you, these are the most precious trees. If you eat the fruit of knowledge, and if you eat the fruit of eternal life, you will become exactly equal to God. That is his fear. Because what more he has? And he is afraid and jealous of you, and he does not want you to become God in your own right. He wants you to remain buffaloes, chewing grass, real grass. I want to ask the Christians of the whole world, if devil has not inspired Eve, you, your Pope, your Cardinal, your Bishop, Archbishop, your Jesus, your Moses, all would be chewing grass in the Garden of Eden, just like buffaloes, utterly content. Only grass was left for them to chew, not even chewing gum. And it is a strange fact, the mythology has some truth in it, a shadow of truth. God found them red-handed eating the fruit of the tree of wisdom, and it was nothing but an apple. Avoid apples, that is original sin. For 3 years I remained only on apples, just to see. Because they had eaten only one apple. Half was eaten by Eve and half was eaten by Adam. So I said, let us. For 3 years, my family was mad at me that what you are doing. But I said, I have to complete 3 years at least to see how I become a sinner. And nothing happened. 3 years I must have eaten as many apples as no man in the whole history. Just apples and nothing else. This is called the original sin, that they did not obey God. And because they committed the original sin of disobedience, you are all original sinners, because you all have come from their blood. They were the original founders of humanity. God caught them red-handed and did not let them remain in the garden, because soon they will eat the other tree's fruit, eternal life. He just threw them out of the Garden of Eden and closed the door. He wanted them to remain ignorant, and he wanted them to suffer the pains of birth, life and death eternally. Who is committing the sin? God, or the devil, or Adam and Eve? Being without any prejudice, you can see God is the criminal. And God does not know even ABC of psychology. If he had not prevented them from these two trees, he had pointed the tree. The garden was so huge, we may not have discovered even up to now which are the trees. We have no idea. He gave a provocation. Just tell a child that don't look inside the room. And even the retarded child will look inside the room. Nothing to say about the intelligent one. He will find ways to look in the room. What is the matter? Why not look in the room? In one family, of course, a Christian family, a boy was coming of age and needed some sex education, and the mother felt embarrassed how to say it to him. So she said, you go to your father and ask him about birds and bees. Said, but I don't want to know about birds and bees. That is a metaphor for sex. Birds and bees. So the boy went to the father and he said, my mother has sent and she wants me to ask, although I am not interested at all what the birds are doing and bees are doing. But just because of her, I am asking you. The father was also embarrassed. It is such a strange situation created by religions that we cannot talk natural things. The father said, why you are not interested in birds and bees? He said, I know exactly what they are doing and I know exactly what you and mother are doing. The same, birds and bees. The father said, you know what we are doing? How you came to know? He said, from the keyhole I see everything. What goes on inside the bedroom? First I used to think that my father seems to be very barbarous, holding my mother under himself, huffing, puffing. What is going here? Is he going to murder my mother? Then later on I asked elder boys in the school, they laughed. He said, he is not murdering your mother. He is loving your mother. So I know everything. You don't have to waste your time teaching me about birds and bees. Every intelligent child looks through the keyhole. What is going on? For the simple reason, because he is prevented. Prevent anybody and you create a provocation. This is simplest psychology. No Sigmund Freud is needed. Just a little intelligence. Just tell people not to do a certain thing and they will become interested. There must be something why they are prevented. And they will try. They would not have tried perhaps if you have not prevented them. So God is not only an idiot, he does not know even a small portion of psychology. And he is a male chauvinist. He killed his own daughter. He is a murderer. And he threw out Adam and Eve from the garden out of fear that they may eat the fruits of life eternal. I consider devil to be the first revolutionary in the world. I consider Eve to be the first to be convinced of the revolution. I consider Adam third to be persuaded by the wife. Obedience has been the fundamental virtue. Why? To perpetuate the past, to keep the status quo of the society as it is, no change, to keep millions of people in spiritual slavery, that is obedience, get exploited, but don't disobey. Behave like a sheep, not like a lion. That has been the teaching of Christianity and other religions. Jesus insults humanity so much that I had to burn the whole Bible. When I was very young, I burned it. My father asked me, "What are you burning?" I said, "It is none of your concern." But he said, "Yeah, at least I can inquire." I said, "Yes, you can inquire. It is Bible. And the same is going to be the fate of your religion's book. Whenever I find something ugly, I don't miss the opportunity to destroy it." Jesus says to people, "You should behave like sheep, and I am your shepherd, and you should obey me, and you should be loyal to me, and you should believe in me. That's all that you need, and I will save you. At the last day of judgment, I will choose my sheep and tell God that these people belong to me, let them in, and others have to be thrown into hellfire." What is the value of obedience? Yes, every politician wants obedience. Every priest wants obedience. Every general wants obedience. Every rich man wants obedience from the servants. Every husband wants obedience from the wife, from the children. All vested interests are based on obedience. I teach you awareness. And if your awareness sees things right, obedience follows. If your awareness sees things are not right, disobedience follows. I don't teach you obedience or disobedience. I teach you simply awareness, clarity of your vision. So you can see yourself. Obedience has done much harm to humanity than disobedience would have done. If all the armies disobey, there will be no war. 5,000 wars, humanity is fighting continuously somewhere or other. there is not a peaceful moment on the whole earth. Somewhere or other, killing, goes on, continues, as if this is our whole purpose of being here, on what all these armies are based, obedience. One of my friends was a colonel in the army. His wife was my student in the university. She introduced me to the colonel. And after Jabalpur, where I was a teacher, they were transferred to Pune. So I used to come here and always used to have at least one meal in their house. The colonel was very much influenced by me, and he had a big regiment in Jabalpur. So he invited me one day. His wife said, "Do you understand what you are doing?" He said, "He's a nice fellow." The wife said, "That's true, he is a nice fellow, but he will teach to your regiment disobedience." He said, "Are you going to teach my regiment disobedience?" I said, "Certainly." He said, "Then the program is cancelled." My God, if my wife has not told me. I said, "I want to teach all the armies of the world disobedience. If they disobey, then let the president and prime ministers have wrestling, boxing. They can enjoy, and we will enjoy on television. But there is no need for millions of people to be killed continuously. Big war, you know the first great world war, you know the second great world war, and you are waiting for the third. But after the second world war, up to now, there have been 125 wars which are small, but even small wars kill millions of people. Just because they are located in a small area, you don't call them world wars, nobody cares about them. Nobody counts how many people are daily killed because of obedience. Obedience teaches you blindness. Obedience teaches you unintelligence. Obedience teaches you that you don't have any responsibility on your own. Just follow the orders. But the order is to kill people. The man who bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the pilot of the plane, killed within 10 minutes more than 200,000 people. And he slept perfectly well in the night. Not even a little pinching conscience, what I have done. No. The army is prepared just to follow. You are not responsible for what action is going to take place and what are going to be the consequences. By the morning he was asked by the journalist, how do you feel? He said, there is no question. I am feeling perfectly good that I have followed the order. Truman, the President of America, who has ordered that Nagasaki and Hiroshima should be destroyed without any reason or rhyme, because Germany has surrendered and Japan was to go in, papers were being ready, just signatures were needed of the Emperor of Japan. Within 2 or 3 days, or at the most 7 days, agreement will have been complete and Japan would have surrendered. Seeing that Japan is going to surrender, Truman was very quick before he surrendered, because then you will not be able to test your atom bomb. He ordered, even his military expert said to him that this is absolute wastage. It is unnecessary murder, and not of one man, more than 200,000 people. Hiroshima and Nagasaki were big cities. But he did not listen to his military experts. He said, you don't know politics. You keep quiet. Order is order. You send the order that immediately, tonight, the bombs have to be dropped before the agreement is signed. And when the order comes from the president, the commander-in-chief immediately gives the order to lower trained people just to follow, because obedience is the greatest virtue. Truman was also asked the next morning that it was your order. How do you feel by killing so many people unnecessarily? Because the whole world can see that Japan was going to surrender. There was no need at all. The war has almost stopped. The commanders from both the sides were having dialogues and making arrangements how to surrender. Truman said, I had to test the atom bomb. We have wasted so much money in creating atom bombs. I am perfectly happy that the bombs work. And now we will be growing more into atomic technology. And Truman was blessed by the Pope. And Churchill was blessed by the Pope. And Eisenhower was blessed by the Pope. And MacArthur was blessed by the Pope. And these were the killers. But on the other side, you will be surprised. The God is one. The Archbishop of Germany blessed Adolf Hitler in the name of the same God. The Archbishop in Japan blessed the Emperor in the name of the same God. one does not know whether to weep or to laugh. Mussolini was a partner with Adolf Hitler and Emperor Hirohito of Japan. And the Pope's Vatican is a small thing, 8 square miles inside Italy. And Benito Mussolini was the Italy's dictator. And the Pope has to bless him. Before the war, the Pope blessed Benito Mussolini. His counterpart in Germany blessed Adolf Hitler. His counterpart in Japan blessed Emperor Hirohito for victory. And when they saw that these people after 5 years are drowning, Pope blessed Churchill, Truman, Eisenhower, MacArthur, the other part. He blessed both. And he asked the gods to help both. Great. There seems to be no logic at all. Obedience is not a virtue. In the name of obedience, more people have been killed, burned alive. But I don't want you to react and become disobedient. I want you to grow beyond both dualities of obedience and disobedience. You should have a bird's eye view of the whole situation. And according to your awareness, consciousness, your meditation, you should respond. Whether it is obedience or disobedience does not matter. They have said in their questions that Christianity has given world faith, hope, and charity. What is faith? It is always blind. A man who knows does not need faith. I don't ask you to have faith in me, Jesus asked. Krishna asked, have faith in me. You are utterly ignorant. In your ignorance, whatever you believe in, whatever is your faith, is a byproduct of ignorance, of fear, of society, of respectability. Faith is not a virtue, and it is not a great contribution to humanity's evolution. Faith is the greatest hindrance in people's search for truth. Before you go into search, you have already handed over a second-hand, dirty faith, and you are told that just this much is enough. You don't have to search. Jesus has done it for you. Buddha has done it for you. But Buddha has been drinking water, my thirst does not get quenched. And Jesus has been drinking wine, I don't get drunk. How Jesus can help you by just having faith in him? Faith Faith simply means hiding ignorance. And it is very cheap. Truth needs great energy, great urgency, and a total involvement in the search. Truth is within you, faith comes from outside. Anything that comes from outside is not going to help you. You cannot take it in. Truth is already alive in you. You don't need any faith. It is faith which has kept humanity ignorant. It is not a contribution to evolution. It is a contribution to involution. Involution means going backwards, not forwards. Faith is always in the other, in Jesus, in God, in heaven, in hell. It is always outside you, and truth is within you. Having faith, you are moving outside, farther away from the truth. I am absolutely against faith, against all belief systems, because they have been preventing humanity from discovering their own Buddhahood, their own godliness. But no priest wants you to discover that you are divine. Every priest of every religion wants you to go away, far away from yourself, so he can exploit you. The moment you know you are yourself part of this existence, not only part but the whole of this existence, that you are in your own right a Buddha, no priest can exploit you. The faith is needed for exploitation. Religions teach faith because they cannot help you to find the truth. They themselves don't know where truth is. The commander-in-chief of the world wants their armies to have faith. Faith in whom? Every Christian army carries, even to the war field, a small Bible. Just one time it works. In the whole history. And that was just a coincidence. But it has been quoted again and again by Christian missionaries around the world. One soldier was keeping his small Bible in his pocket in the First World War, and a bullet hit the Bible and saved his heart. They said, this is God's miracle. But only it happened to one man. And all the soldiers are carrying since that time a small Bible in their pocket. It does not work. Even an ordinary person can understand exceptions are not rules. The exception is an accident. It was just by chance. If he was carrying a Playboy magazine, it would have done the same work. And I doubt whether his Bible was not having inside a Playboy magazine. All soldiers are interested more in Playboy than in Bible, because they are deprived of women. And that too has a reason why they are deprived of women. As sexual energy accumulates, one becomes irritated. If your sexual energy is satisfied, you don't feel like fighting. But when your sexual energy is repressed, you are ready to destroy anything. You are in anger, in rage. You are blind. You don't know why you are killing the other person. The other person also has a wife, a child, a mother, an old father to look after. And he has not done anything bad to you. You don't even have been introduced. And you are killing a person just because your commander has orders. Better to kill the commander. At least millions of people will be saved by killing one man. Just kill all the commander-in-chiefs of the world. Maybe 100, 200, does not matter. In a world where Adolf Hitler kills 30 million people in war, and he does not go to the war. It is the commander-in-chief. They don't go to the war. It is the lower officers. They don't go to the war. It is a hierarchy. The poorest soldier at the last end of the hierarchy goes to the war. He receives orders. He does not know from where those orders are coming. The President Truman is in Washington White House, and the order comes to MacArthur, who is in a warship outside the area of Japan. And then the order goes to a pilot, and the pilot does not know from where it is coming. And Truman is a religious man. He goes every Sunday to the church. White House has a special church for the president. What kind of religious people are these? Even his name should be changed. Truman. He is not even man, and you are calling him Truman. He is the greatest murderer in history. Nobody has killed so many people simultaneously. Within 3 minutes, Hiroshima finished. Within other 3 minutes, Nagasaki is finished. Within 4 minutes, the pilot is dead. In 10 minutes, the whole massacre is complete. I say absolutely no faith is needed. I teach you trust, not faith, not belief. Because faith and belief are in others. Trust is in yourself. I want you to trust in yourself. The existence has brought you. You are still connected with the existence, otherwise you will die. Have faith in you and search your roots with deep trust. But it is not in somebody else, not in some scripture, not in some sepals,
not in some messiah, not in some prophet. No, absolutely no. This faith has been the greatest obstacle for seekers and searchers of truth. Hope is another danger. And these monks have sent me these words, they don't know me at all. Hope, in other words, is called by Karl Marx the opium of the people. And he's right. Who needs the hope? The rich man does not bother. It is the poor. It is the sick. It is the dying. It is the starving, the beggar, who need hope. Hope in a future life where they will be rewarded immensely. For what? For being poor and beggars. For producing dozens of children. And creating more poverty in the world. They will be rewarded in heaven. It seems God wants this world to be turned into Islam. Then he will be very happy. Everybody will have faith. Everybody will be obedient. Everybody will go to the church. And God will be immensely happy. But if people are having trust in themselves, who cares about God? You are coming closer and closer to your own godliness. You have found your own shrine inside. The outside God becomes a fiction. And hope is always for the future. And the reality is always in the present. Hope deprives you of the present. And the present is the only moment you can explore your reality, your beauty, your truth, your divineness. Hope is a very cunning strategy. Once I was going to the university, a beautiful young woman waved me to stop my car. I thought perhaps she wants a ride. So I stopped the car. I opened the window and asked her, what is the matter? What do you want? She said, I don't want anything. I simply want to give you this pamphlet. Just read it. And it has the phone number. If you want more of this kind of literature, I will send you, or I will come myself to deliver it. As I was moving, I started looking just on the pamphlet. There was a beautiful bungalow made of pure Italian marble. And by the side and behind the bungalow, a huge mountain capped with snow. And from the mountain, a great waterfall coming by the side of the bungalow and becoming a river just in front of the bungalow lawn. The gate opens on a bridge. Because the waterfall has become a river, and around the river huge trees, lush green, and in the bungalow's garden so many roses, such a beautiful lawn, such a beautiful fountain. I said, I had never seen this house here or anywhere in India. So I turned the page,
there it was written, if you believe in the only begotten Son of God, Jesus Christ, you will have such bungalows available for you in paradise. So cheap. This is all business. This is giving people hope. Now a man who has no house and lives on his street will treasure this pamphlet in case he reaches paradise, and perhaps he will reach, because Jesus says, blessed are the poor, they shall inherit the kingdom of God, and who can be more poor than me? So keep it, because paradise will be vast. So many millions of saints of the past and I would love to find this bungalow. What is hope? To whom you give the hope? To the hopeless one, who has lost all hope, seeing the life and the competition and continuous struggle for surviving, who has become hopeless. Karl Marx says again, religion is the hope of the hopeless. It gives a certain consolation that if not in this life, and this life is not much, most of it is already gone, maybe few years more, just a little patience and prayer and faith, and you will receive such beautiful bungalows without any cost. Only faith is needed. Hope is not again a contribution to humanity's progress. It prevents progress. It makes people believe in dreams. They don't start creating reality, transforming reality, changing the social structure, changing all institutions which create only misery and nothing else. Hope prevents them. Why bother? Revolution may come, but you will be gone. And in revolution, getting involved, you will not be able to pray, you will not be able to go to the church, you will not be able to have enough faith. If you have enough faith, then this society, this structure is made by God. You have to be patient. It is a fire test for you. Your poverty, your sickness, your death, everything. Just be quiet and have faith in God. Just today I have received such an ugly story you will not believe. In Pennsylvania, USA, a former Seventh-day Adventist priest who had been out of work for months chose to starve himself and his family to death. Rather than spend money which he had put aside for God, he had $4,000 with him. But he has put it aside for God. So rather than feeding his children, his wife, they were starving. How can he touch the money? Once he has committed it to God. That will be betrayal. That will be not being faithful. His only son died out of his starvation. And then he was caught by the police. That how the son has died. Now he is in jail. The police went into the house, a beautiful house, good furniture, everything perfect, only no food. The wife was almost dying, 3 weeks of starvation. The daughter was almost dying. The priest himself was on the verge of death. All those people of the house were taken into the hospital, and the priest was asked that you had money in the house because the police found those $4,000. He said, I would like to die, and I would like my wife and my children to die, but I cannot betray my faith. And even in this situation, he is in jail, in the jail hospital. He says that he is being charged with murder. Certainly he has murdered the son. And he was going to murder his wife and his daughter, and he was going to commit suicide himself. The priest says that his faith in God was not shaken. Faith is blind, utterly blind. Hope is blind. And I have talked about charity to you. But I will tell a small anecdote. A Christian mother was telling his small son that it is your duty, being a faithful Christian, to share whatever you have with others. Charity is the foundation of our religion. The little boy said, that's perfectly good. I will give whatever I have to others. What they will do? The mother said, what they will do? He said, I am asking, am I the only faithful Christian in the world? Is not somebody else going to give his toys to me when I have given my toys to somebody else in charity? The mother said, God will take care. He said, this seems to be very unmathematical. He was learning mathematics. The mother said, what do you mean? He said, it is so simple that there is no need for me to explain. It is an absurd idea. I give to others, they give to me. Somebody else gives to somebody else, he gives to somebody else. What is the point? I have my toys, they have their toys. I take care of myself, they take care of themselves. Why make a clumsy and messy affair of the whole thing? What is the point? And that is what charity is. Absolutely meaningless. Give to the poor. But first you have to create poor. Otherwise, whom you will give?
So first create poor, then give to the poor, then God will be very happy with you. In a small school, a Christian teacher is telling to the student a 1 hour long sermon how to get to heaven. And finally she asked a little boy, elder, that you stand and tell me how to reach heaven. He said, first you have to commit sin. He said, what? He said, yes. According to your sermon, I have concluded, first you commit sin, then God forgives you. Otherwise, whom he will forgive? And he will feel very miserable if he has nobody to forgive. Make him happy. Commit as many sins you can. God is kind. God is love. God is compassion. So he will forgive. And he is sitting there for eternity just for one idea, to forgive people. Have mercy on God. Commit sin. That is the way to heaven. A clear cut arithmetic. But the teacher was stunned. She could not believe that boys, small boys, can come to such conclusion. But it is not only small boys. Umar Khayyam, a great Persian poet, has written in his Rubaiyat, which Fitzgerald has made world famous by translating it into English. Rubaiyat means poetry. It is a very special kind of poetry, Rubai. Just like haiku is in Zen, Rubai is in Sufism. In one of his Rubai, he says, don't be worried. Enjoy women, enjoy wine. God is compassionate. Don't you trust in God's compassion that you are trying not to commit sin? Commit as many sins as you can. Give God a good opportunity to show his compassion, love, forgiveness. So it is not only a small child, a very great poet also has the same idea. All these ideas, original sin, faith, hope, charity, have not made the world better. It has prevented the world from growing in consciousness, growing in its experience of the real existence, and transcending all poverty, all birth, all death, and becoming part of one with the eternal life. We are searching the same tree that Adam and Eve missed, eternal life. Christianity has no meditation, because meditation will take you in. It has prayer. Prayer takes you out. Prayer is towards a fictitious God. Meditation is deep into your own existence. It is not fiction. You are a reality. God is only invention. I will take one by one their other questions. They have come into the clutches of a lion. The Sutra, our beloved master, once when Yaku-san was reciting a sutra, a monk asked him, "You don't usually allow us to recite sutras. Why do you yourself recite a sutra?" The question seems to be relevant. Yaku-san prevents monks from reciting sutras, and a monk found him, he is reciting himself a sutra. Naturally and obviously, it is contradictory to his own teaching. Yaku-san said, "I just want to entertain my eyes. These beautiful sutras, I relish in their beauty, in their composition, in their music, in their truth. In their immense implications, I feel fresh. My eyes become sharper. It is just an entertainment for my eyes." The monk asked, "Can I also recite sutras like you?" Again you will feel the question seems to be relevant. Now it is no more. When the master recites the sutra, he already knows the truth. Hence he finds the truth in the sutra. A man who does not know the truth will be simply wasting time. He will not find any truth in the sutra. He will become knowledgeable, but he will not become enlightened. It is a thing, but I also insist on the fact, don't read scriptures now, but when you have become a Buddha, enjoy the scriptures. There are many diamonds here and there, and many rubies and many emeralds, much treasure. But first you should find yourself. First you should find your clarity of vision. An ignorant man, an unconscious man, will stuff sutras into his mind, borrowed, meaningless. But a man who has realized, who has come to his very center, a man who does not need to read the sutras, he knows the truth, can entertain himself. It is almost like a bank. The same principle. If you have money, the bank is ready to give you a loan. If you don't have money, no bank is ready to give you a loan. It's strange. Ordinary logic will be, the man who has no money, give him the loan, and the man who has money, there is no need to give him a loan. But that is not how banks work. The same is true on a higher level. A man who has the truth has no need to read the sutra, can enjoy. It is a duty. He can find nuances which he will never find. He can find diamonds which he will pass by because you don't know what a diamond is. You have known only stones, colored stones. I am reminded of a story. A poor man, a potter. In India, the potters use the donkey to carry their pots to the marketplace to sell, mud pots. He was coming back, selling all the pots, sitting himself on the donkey, and then he saw by the side of the road a huge stone, shining, radiating. He said, "Great, my donkey will enjoy it. I have never given him anything." So he got down, he picked up the stone. It was not a stone. It was unpolished diamond. But he was very happy sitting on the donkey. He told the donkey that when we reach the home, I will make a hole in it and hang it around your neck. "I have never given you anything. I am poor. You are poor. But this is a beautiful thing. Radiate. You will be the only monkey in the only donkey in the whole world with such a beautiful stone hanging around." Just then a jeweler passed by in his chariot. He stopped the chariot. He could not believe his eyes. A man sitting on a donkey holding such a huge diamond, many more times bigger than Kohinoor, which is now in the British Museum, given by the Queen as a gift. It was a gift from Nizam Hyderabad. Hyderabad has the greatest quarry of diamonds. All big diamonds have come from Hyderabad. The village name is Golconda. He has presented that diamond, Kohinoor, to Queen Victoria. Then it was polished and cut. Now it is 1/3 of its weight, but 1,000 times more valuable, because the more it is polished and cut, the more it shines, radiates. It is the purest diamond in the world. You can see through and through. There is no flaw in it. India has been asking it back because it was a present, and British Museum has no right to keep it. But that diamond the potter was holding in his hand was far more bigger than Kohinoor. The charioteer stopped. The jeweler came down. He said, "How much you will take for this stone?" He did not say diamond. He knew perfectly well that this fellow does not understand that it is a diamond. The poor man said, "4 annas will do. I will purchase something for my poor donkey." for another. The jeweler became greedy. He said, I will give you 2 anas just for a stone. At that moment, a king has come for hunting. On his horse, he stopped his horse. He looked at the diamond. And because the king has come, and the jeweler has moved his chariot, just slowly, thinking that that man will understand that who is going to give him 2 anas. If he does not come back, I will move again and raise the price to 3 anas, or if worse comes to worse, I will give him 4 anas. But when he came back, the king was there, and the king said, how much that jeweler has offered for this diamond? The potter said, diamond? I thought it is a stone, so I asked him 4 anas, and he offered me 2 anas. The king said, its cost is 1,000,000 rupees, 1,000,000 rupees at least. I will give you 1,000,000 rupees. At that time, the jeweler came running because he knew it is almost 10,000,000 rupees. He said to the potter that I am the first customer and you have offered me 4 anas, I am ready to give. He said, now it is too late. I was an ignorant potter. I had no idea that it is a diamond, but you are a jeweler. Your greed is infinite. You could not take in 4 anas, but the king has given me the order to take it to the palace for 1,000,000 rupees. The question is recognition. A master like Yaku-san can read the sutras because he can recognize what is true and what is not true. And he can enjoy the ancient Buddhas and their statements and their articulateness, how they express such mysterious phenomenon in simple words. But the monks asking, can I also recite sutras like you, is absolutely wrong, because unless you are like the master, you cannot read the sutras like the master. From where you will get the eyes, from where you will get the consciousness to find the diamond. Yaku-san said, if you want to recite sutras like me, you must tear, even through the hide of a cow. First, have that much clarity of eyes that your eyes become almost X-rays. They go through and through the hide of a cow. First, get that eye. And then you can read the sutras, not before that. On another occasion, Yaku-san was asked by Governor Zee, what are the precepts in meditation and wisdom? Yaku-san answered, this poor monk has not such useless furniture. He is calling the great precepts, meditation and wisdom, just useless furniture. Ri said, don't be so mysterious. Yaku-san said, if you want to have what I have, you must sit on the highest mountain. go down to the bottom of the deepest sea. You don't throw off your burdens even when you go to bed. You are busy with your illusions. This is not right time for you to ask about meditation and wisdom. That's why I have called it useless furniture. It will not be of any use. It will be just another weight on your head. You have already enough weight. So many illusions, so many desires, so many ambitions, so much greed. What you will do with meditation and wisdom, they will become an unnecessary load on your head. You cannot go even to your bed without all kinds of tensions, anxiety, anguish, angst. Wisdom and meditation are a totally different world. That's why I said, this poor monk has not such useless furniture. I cannot give you wisdom and meditation. If you want, then you will have to sit on the highest mountain. The highest mountain is your consciousness. And you must sit on the highest mountain, go down to the bottom of the deepest sea. Your consciousness is both. It is the highest mountain and it is the deepest sea. Its roots go to the deepest being of your existence and its branches reach to the stars. Unless you have both, you should not ask about meditation and wisdom. Meditation takes you to the roots of your being, to the very bottom of the sea, and then suddenly sprouts a tremendous flowering tree which reaches to the stars. You can have both together. Meditation takes you deeper and wisdom takes you higher. And this is the vertical dimension I have talked to you. The whole expanse of the vertical dimension, deepest as the bottom of the sea, for example, Pacific Ocean is 5 miles deep. That is nothing. You are going to be deeper. You are going to be higher than the Everest in the Himalayas. And this is your possibility, which Christianity and other religions have been presenting you. They are calling you to the church. I am calling you to your own potential. I am persuading you to reach to the highest consciousness and the deepest meditation, and you will have all the splendor of existence in your hands. Santoka wrote a small, very small haiku. I have no hope. Autumn deepens. Just visualize a homeless wanderer. That's what a seeker is, in search of the home. He has not reached yet. A homeless wanderer. But a homeless wanderer has no attachment, has no position, has no burden, has no tension, has no anxiety.
The homeless wanderer is slowly, slowly relaxing in a deep let go. Sitting under a tree perhaps, near a river or a mountain, he says, I have no home. Autumn deepens. But it does not matter. The autumn is so beautiful and it is deepening every moment. I have no possessions, no home, no barriers, no blindfold on my eyes. I can see the autumn is deepening. I am so clear and clean that autumn deepens. That reminds me one of the questions of those Christian monks. They were very much concerned with the marble of the Buddha hall. And they are not at all concerned with all the marble in the Vatican. They are not concerned about great cathedrals around the world with all their architecture and marble and statues. They are concerned with this small marble in the Buddha auditorium, that's what I call blindness. If you can see this marble, how can you not see Vatican? All the churches of Vatican, all the statues of Jesus are made of purest Italian marble. Great sculptors for centuries have been working in creating cathedrals, churches. And as far as this community is concerned, I have to remind them, they must have heard from their childhood that cleanliness is second to God. Here there is no God. Cleanliness is the first. And there is nothing more clean than the marble. It has a tremendous beauty, cleanliness, purity. It symbolizes beauty, architect. We are putting marble on the commune road. We have put marble in the public toilet. I don't know. I just imagine. But my images come true. Manisha has asked the question, our beloved master, a visitor here observed that there is an agelessness in the people around you. What is the explanation for this? Manisha, the explanation is very simple. I have never felt my age. I still feel like a child.
As I close my eyes, I don't see any difference in my innocence, in my mischievousness. I am the only rascal saint in the whole world. I sometimes wonder whether I am aging or not. My beard has become white. It is not because of my age. It is due to the courtesy of President Ronald Reagan's poison. The poison tellium that he has given to me has one of the symptoms that it turns your hair white. They would have turned 10 years after. He helped me. He saved 10 years. He has given me a beautiful beard. The whole credit goes to him. When I look into the mirror, into my eyes, I see the same eyes I have always seen from my very childhood. I close my eyes, I look inside, I am the same, just ageless. That's why I go on forgetting how long I have been speaking to you. Last night, it was really too much. I have a watch, but I don't want to offend you, so I don't look at it. Looking at a watch means I am tired of you. I am never tired. On the way, Anandu said, always said that this was the record. I said to myself, just wait. Someday it will be the record. It is true, Manisha. It is an ageless temper. Here old are just as innocent as the children, or even more, because your inner being is ageless. Once you come in touch with it, it is timeless. It never grows old or young or anything. It is just the same since eternity to eternity. Once you start coming more and more closer to your eternity, a certain agelessness starts radiating from your eyes, from your faces, and the person who observes this must have a very clear vision. I can see it happening. You are becoming every day younger. Sometimes I wonder if everybody becomes too young. It will be very difficult to explain them the sutras. It is time for Gurdayal. Pope the Fuller gets an invitation from the Chinese government to spend $20 million on a 10-day tour of China. He is the first pope ever to make the trip to China and is amazed to find that nobody there knows anything about Christianity. The Polish Pope makes a great effort to explain to Prime Minister Wu, his host, who speaks little English, something of the basics of Christianity. You know, says Pope the Polak, is spreading his arms wide and rolling his eyes up. You must have heard about it. Man die on cross. Ah, very good. Replies Wu. Yes, me see the movie. Host say the Peruvian farmer has a donkey called Pedro. One day he lends Pedro to his mother-in-law, Mama Enchilada. That evening, when Jose goes to collect Pedro, he finds that the donkey has managed to kick his mother-in-law down the village well. The next day at Mama Enchilada, as a funeral, the entire male population of the village all flocked to the church. After the ceremony, Father Gonzalez approaches Jose and says, "Your mother-in-law must have been liked very much. I have never seen so many people in my church." Says Jose, "They did not come to bury Mama Enchilada. They came to borrow Pedro." Unsuspected by the American public, President George Bush has a great problem. He has secretly been going to see Dr. Mindbender, the White House psychiatrist, for some intense therapy. One morning, George Bush is lying on the shrink's couch, just babbling away. "I am a nice man, really I am," says George in his best TV voice. "I am the ex-director of the CIA. I have a college degree. I am a respectable white family man. I lead an unblemished life. I always contribute to Mother Teresa's charity fund. And I often visit Father Fungus to have a heart-to-heart chat. I have nothing to reproach myself with, yet I keep having this disturbing delusion, this nagging feeling that I am a violent mass murderer." Says Dr. Mindbender as he quietly locks the door and pulls down the blinds, "You must not worry, George. This is quite common among many mild-mannered, quiet people like yourself. But before we proceed,
would you mind putting down your submachine gun? Do you get it? Otherwise, you will get it in the middle of the night. Nivedana. Body to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to enter in. Gather your whole life force. Collect your total consciousness with an immense urgency, as if this moment is going to be your last moment. Then rush towards the center as fast as possible. As you go deeper, a great silence descends over you. A little more deeper, and fountains of peace start bringing your whole inner space to a coolness you have never known before. Deeper more, and you see for the first time your real nature, the Buddha, the awakened one. And around the awakened one, all is ecstasy, all is joy, all is blissfulness. Just remember one thing, just one thing. That is the only quality of the Buddha. Witnessing. Witness that you are not the body. Witness that you are not the mind. Witness that you are not the other subtle bodies, layer upon layer. You are only a witness, nothing else. The moment you are simply a witness, you are a Buddha. This Buddha has been hiding deep within you for millions of lives. He has to be brought out. He has to change your whole life. He has to bring his grace to your gesture, beauty to your eyes, agelessness to your being, to your healing. But first make sure that you are simply a witness. To be simply a witness, you are at the highest peak of consciousness. And when you are at the highest peak of consciousness, from there you can look at the deepest depth of your being, the very abysmal depth. You have become from horizontal into a vertical being. To me, the vertical being is the Superman. The new man which is going to come in the world if the world has to survive. The horizontal man is going out of date. It has lived long enough. Now comes the age, the new age, for the vertical man to appear on the horizon. I want my people to be the first vertical man, highest and deepest together, to make your witnessing more clear. Nivedana, relax, let go, but only remember you are a witness. Slowly, slowly, by and by, your consciousness starts melting like ice into the ocean. I can see around me 10,000 Buddhas melting into an ocean. Gautam the Buddha auditorium has become an ocean without any ripple. Such peace, such silence, such isness. Transforms me. Only this isness creates wisdom in you. Wisdom is a shadow of meditation. In fact, all so-called virtues without meditation are fake. With meditation, authentic virtues start arising all over your inner state. You have to face a tremendous revolution. You become a garden. All kinds of flowers. It's strange, unworldly fragrances fill your inner space. To me, to know this space is to know godliness. I call godliness the Buddha. Now, before Nivedana calls you back, collect as much experience of the center, as much juice, drink of it. Collect all the wild flowers
of the beyond. You have to bring them back. They have to become slowly, slowly your blood, your bones, your very marrow, and persuade the Buddha. He is coming every day, inch by inch, closer to you. It is your nature. He has to come to the surface just like a lotus flower comes from the dirty mud, rises above the mud, above the water, and opens its petals to a new sunrise. You are all facing a great dawn very close. You are the most blessed people at this moment on the earth. The whole humanity is entangled with trivia, useless furniture. To me, according to my experience, this is the only religiousness there is. Nivedana, come back, but come back with the joy, with the silence, with the serenity. Sit down for a few moments just to recollect the golden path you have traveled, and look just behind you. The Buddha has come closer to you. First, it will be a shadow behind you, and then you will be a shadow behind you. That will be the great, blissful day in your life. Yaku-san says, "Isness is my business." That is my business also. That has been the business of all the Buddhas. A single business, bringing people to isness, to here and now. And the doors are flung open of all the mysteries and all the miracles of existence. Okay, Manisha?
Yes.